Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Thanks to Jenny Green for getting us to Friday. It is Friday, the 18th of September, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, the future of our sporting bodies hangs in the balance.
If these projections were to materialise, the very existence of professional rugby on the island would inevitably be under significant threat at some point in time in 2021.
But for now, at least we've a big Champions Cup weekend to preview.
They have pace in their team, but they also have size. You know, set piece wise, their scrum is formidable.
What's that mean?
I was expecting a little bit more from that. We've Greg Allen on US Open Day 2, plus a huge soccer weekend to preview, including Vera Pauw's German mission for the girls in green.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game on 2FM, and we'd love to hear from you, especially if you're looking forward to a major sporting event at the weekend, maybe a few people heading to matches outside, obviously, the capital. People are getting to go
along. Stop rubbing it in, Donica.
I know, I'm not trying to be smug. I am feeling the pain for people up there. It must be incredibly tough, and we've seen the other three counties doing it as well, so it must be very hard. But at least, Marie, there is loads on, isn't there? Like, sporting-wise, if you have to sit in, not a bad weekend to have it.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm kind of getting a little bit more used to it as well. You know, it's like I'm not planning my weekends around going to games anymore, so this isn't as big a blow, because it's not like we had got used to being back at pitches and at matches again. So, yeah, lots to look forward to. And, you know, even last night, having that Shamrock Rovers game on the TV, we're going to have the women's game on the TV tomorrow as well. You know, that's kind of the reality of it now, so there's nothing we can do about it.
And you mentioned it there, the Ireland-Germany game, like, that is the big one, but there is loads more, Marie, isn't there? Like, I know you will be living for Chelsea versus Liverpool on Sunday, and I can't wait to chat to Alan Colley a little bit later on about it, but another big game.
Another huge game, and I think just the whole little bit of history now as well between Chelsea and Liverpool is adding a little bit of spice to it as well. And look, it's probably the one that I've been looking forward to most anyway, and it'll be interesting to see if Alan Colley still thinks that Chelsea are going to win the league one weekend.
I bet you he'll deny it as they get closer. There was good news. Sam Bennett finished 8th in stage 19 of the Tour de France, so you would kind of think with classification and the points that he could be in a great position for Sunday. So that's a brilliant thing to watch, and would be a brilliant thing to see him achieve that on Sunday. So there's another good thing to keep an eye on. But you mentioned it, the Shamrock Rovers game. It was kind of mixed fortunes for the Irish teams, wasn't it? Dundalk had a good win, but AC Milan were just a bit too good, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. I think that sums it up perfectly. They were a little bit too good, but I think everybody afterwards was pretty proud at the way Shamrock Rovers performed. You know, they have a way of playing, and they stuck to that, and they did their best. But, you know, you've got these really top class internationals in town, and I think it kind of just shows the level that they're at. But I think Shamrock Rovers did very well, and they can absolutely be proud of themselves. But looking at Zlatan Ibrahimovic, he just seems like an absolutely completely different animal. There was pictures of him with Aaron Green afterwards, and Zlatan had his top off, and, you know, Aaron Green would have been seen as a really big footballer in Ireland, and seeing him beside Ibrahimovic, they just looked completely different.
It was, wasn't it? It was like John Hayes with Peter Stringer. He was just so tall. His tan's on point, may I add. Really good tan. But what a beautiful gesture to obviously swap jerseys with Aaron Green, and then Aaron to pass it over to his son, who was the ball boy at it. You know,
yeah.
Just,
I've actually mentioned Jack on this show before, because all through lockdown, they live near me, and every single day Aaron was out trading during lockdown, going down to the local park by himself, and he had Jack with him. So wow. Jack plays for Shamrock Rovers as well, and he was putting in as much time training as his dad, who's a professional footballer. So it was nice to see him even being there and able to see his dad play in that environment.
Yeah, well, ball boys are vital at the moment. There's no one in the crowd to throw back in the ball, so it's probably the hardest job at a game. But Marie, I remember, I'll never forget, I went down to watch the Kinsale Sevens when I was really young, and I remember Pat O'Hara gave me his jersey, and it was such a big thing for me. He just became my hero after that, and I remember anytime I'd watch him play, I'd learn from him. It's the small things, and I know we've you know, the likes of Lindsay Pete on later on, but you do remember the people that throw you a pair of socks, or just small little things that keep you involved and make you love it.
Yeah, Ivana Quillen, a colleague of mine, her daughter Peggy has taken up playing football, and she's a really big Arsenal fan, and Ivana had put put it up on Twitter that she got a Katie McCabe jersey and shorts for her birthday, and she was heading off training, and Katie sent her over a pair of boots signed. Like, they're the kind of things that make you stay in sport as well.
Yeah, and it's amazing. I remember my nephew was lucky enough to get a pair of Keith Earls' boots, and he couldn't believe the weight of them. You know what I mean? It's just, but they're little things that, and I suppose it is important in the sport to remember, you know, the next generation that are coming through and just fuel them with it. You know, they're small things. Now, that is a nice one to get. I wouldn't be surprised if Aaron had that up on eBay in the evening.
Yeah, it's an impressive one. Look, we had, I think, of a bit of a tough day for sport. The heads of some of the biggest organisations today spoke to the Oireachtas COVID-19 Response Committee, and they made it very clear that the future is looking very, very stark. And we heard from Philip Brown there at the top of the show, a little clip from him, and it is pretty scary. Philip Brown warned that the professional game here could cease to exist by next year if supporters continue to be locked out of stadiums. Interim FAI CEO Gary Owens said that he fears for the 2021 League of Ireland season, and also indicated that debates loom about next summer's Euros, which some of them were supposed to be, are due to be staged here. And then the GA Director General Tom Ryan was also speaking, and he said his association would double down on its efforts to ensure protocol and safety would be very high if increased numbers of supporters were allowed to attend games in the near future. Now, to dissect the day's events, because they were quite large, we are joined by Rob Hartnett of Sport for Business. Rob, you're very welcome. And I think, look, just listening to all of that today, it's very clear that sport needs help.
Thanks, Marie. Yes, indeed, it was a big day for sport. It was a day of dizzying figures. If you're not involved in sport and the administration of sport on a day-to-day basis, they will have come as something of a shock. But the IRFU talking about a projected loss for this year of €35 million, the GAA talking about a hole in the finances of €50 million as well, and both of those organisations, as well as the FAI, very much in tune with the idea of getting fans back into stadia. And looking back over the financial reports of all of the organisations over the last 12 months, you can see exactly why that is such an important element. €84 million of income that received by Irish rugby came from representative matches in the year ending June 2019. Match day revenue in the GAA just from the championship alone was €36.1 million in 2019 as well. And of course, as we know, the income from both of those organisations in terms of match day revenue this year will be close to zero. So when you think of the cost of putting on those matches, the GAA pinned that at about 35% of a cost to sales ratio. So you're looking at tens of millions of euros that has just evaporated completely. Now, the GAA, obviously, it's helping to fund clubs, it's helping to fund regional organisations across the whole country. But rugby is perhaps in a more parlous situation because of the professional game here. €45 million was the cost of the professional game in 2019, much of that going in wages to players. And of course, those wages are still being paid. So the costs in rugby in particular are still racking up, and the income has just disappeared off the face of the planet.
Rob, just on that, the kind of pro side of it, but it was good to see today. Normally, organisations can work in silos and look after themselves. It was brilliant to see the FAI, the GAA and the RFU work together and kind of nearly share the pain of the trouble they're all in.
It very much is like sport as a family. And, you know, there's an awful lot more that unites us than divides us. You're going to see that more as well over the course of the coming days, because a week ago, each of the three organisations, together with representatives of Sport Ireland representing other sports, we shouldn't forget the other sports as well, like basketball and gymnastics, athletics and swimming, all taking a big hit too. But they've come together to look at a plan that will enable people to get back into stadia. They mentioned today the fact that getting 5,000 into a stadium like the Aviva would be good, but it would have no bearing whatsoever on the financial elements of it. And Gary Owens spoke about the European Super Cup this week taking place in Budapest. There's a trial there where they're going to allow 20,000 into the crowd. In the Football League in England, there's 7 matches over the course of this weekend that they're allowing 1,000 spectators in. And there's going to be lessons learned from each of those in terms of how you do it, and more importantly, how you do it safely. So all three organisations coming together, they're going to put a plan to government through the expert group, which the government established back in the summer to help advise them on matters of sporting interest. And all three of them working really closely together, just trying to get the right thing, because it's the financial element, but it's also the social, the well-being side of sport that is so important. And particularly on a day like today where, well, in Dublin at least, we've got the blow of moving to level three and the loss of juvenile games coming through in GAA and, you know, a big hit there to the sporting mentality. But the fact that sport can continue and that the morale boost it brings is still there for all of us is really important. And I think government has recognised that. They've made money available already. There's a total of 70 million on the table, which is being distributed and being managed out through clubs. There's bigger amounts of money available for each of the organisations to try and just mitigate some of the financial loss. But it is, in sport, as always, more than the financial matters that are important.
And Rob, just given where we are, like in a pandemic, and you know, we're in sports, we're obviously hugely invested in sport. You know, it's something that we love. It's our jobs. It's our pastimes. It's our interest. But there's obviously a whole lot of other things going on and a whole lot of other industries who are suffering as well. But yet sport wants to be prioritised and they are looking for quite a lot of money. And, you know, a lot of it will go to elite sport and professional sport. Do you think that they should be prioritised?
Well, I think that you have to look at sport in the round, because that elite level of it, and you look at it and you see, well, the wages that might be paid to a professional rugby player, you look at that in isolation and you think, is that really the best way that government should be actually funding money? But it's not going to that. That's only a part of it, a very small part of it. And the biggest part is going to fund clubs. You look at the IRFU accounts, 11 million of their accounts last year went to clubs and grassroots. Over 80% of the GAA money goes back into its units, back out into clubs and environments. And we saw during the darkest days of the lockdown and the pandemic how sporting clubs and communities really came to the aid of the wider community as well. There was parcels being delivered out to elderly people who were cocooning. There's the joy when we came back of young teams coming out and playing and training and getting to talk to each other again. My own daughter was supposed to be playing in a championship semi-final now tomorrow, McCoola out against St. Bridget's, and that's not going to happen now. It'll be pushed back 3 weeks. But we do have to keep in mind the importance of sport in so many people's lives, the way that they conduct themselves, the way that we identify ourselves. It really is so important. And if part of that money is going towards the professional game, and, you know, we're going to watch as Leinster take on Saracens in Aviva Stadium tomorrow. We're not going to watch it live. There should have been 45, 48, 50,000 people in there generating 2 million of revenue. That's what comes, and those are the heroes. Dunica speaking there about Pat O'Hara giving the jersey, Ibra giving over his jersey last night. You know, professional athletes, they're just part of the bigger picture of sport.
And one of the things that is part of the bigger picture are major championships as well. And Gary Owens did reveal today that there are concerns about the Euros and how they'll be received. Rob, you know, sport for business is what you do. What are you feeling about them?
I would be concerned. And in part, it's based on the evidence that we saw only 10 days ago when European Athletics withdrew the Ireland's and Dublin's hosting of this year's European cross-country championships. And the logic behind it was Ireland's position in relation to social distancing, in relation to the way that people had to isolate, the way that people were handling the crisis. We're handling the crisis in the best interests of public health and as advised to us by NPHET. But looking at it from outside, from a European perspective, where other European countries might be doing things in a slightly more relaxed fashion, European Athletics decided that Ireland wasn't really in a great position to host it. Now, that was December, and the Euros won't be until June. So there's plenty of time still to play out. And UEFA will want nothing more than to be able to bring those four games to Dublin. But they will be looking at it in the round. And it's probably going to be, you know, in a couple of months' time that they will be taking a look at each of the countries, at how they're handling things in relation to sport. It will be a huge blow. It'll be the biggest sporting event that we've ever hosted in Ireland if those four games come here, regardless as to whether the Republic of Ireland or Northern Ireland have qualified for them. It'll be a huge blow, both financially, morale-wise, everything to lose them. But, you know, we are on tenterhooks. It's not a given at the moment that either us or indeed any of the stadia that are hosting it would be in a position as well. Wembley is in the same, you know, the UK is going through some pretty dark days itself in relation to the virus. We're just in the same position as everybody else. We're waiting, we're hoping for the best. And, you know, to be honest, sport is all about that. We have to be optimistic in sport, or else what's the point of it? And, you know, we have to always believe that we're going to win the next game or win the next tackle or break the next record. And, you know, hopefully we just have to hope for the best that we actually come through this with all the public health guidelines in place, but also with sport in a manner that means that it's sustainable throughout 2021 and for long into the future.
Well, there are some big rugby games that are going to come a lot quicker than those Euros next summer, and there are the Six Nations and the Autumn Nations Cup. Michael Corcoran caught up with Philip Brown today to ask him about fans returning to games.
We're in a position where we need to produce a route map as to how we move from zero to full house, and there's going to be various stages along the way. It's going to be incremental, I would imagine, and we will put that together over the next number of weeks. We'll bring it to the expert group in Sport Ireland and NPHET, and we'll try and work with them to see how we can plan for major events in our stadia. And you know, listen, it's going to be dictated ultimately by the guidelines that come from NPHET, and by the where we are in the cycle of the virus itself. So, you know, but all we can do is put our best foot forward.
Rob, we hear there from Philip Rome, we've heard from Tom Ryan, Gary Owens. The sporting bodies have put their cards on the table. What can we expect now from the Doyle Committee and government?
You know, we are only a small part of the jigsaw that they're having to deal with. It was good to have the opportunity to actually state the case for sport today. And I think that honestly, you know, politicians will always listen to what their constituents and what the people out there want. And people want sport. So I think that they will certainly have listened carefully today. They have already taken the first steps by making that pot of 70 million available as well. And we have to hope that the position that sport has always had in Irish public life will continue, albeit while recognising the fact that there are many, many other sectors like the hospitality, entertainment sector, so many others that have, you know, a call on government resource. But we think that sport is important, and if we can't have the courage of our conviction to actually go out there and say that to the people who are making the decisions, then that would be a sad day. But today we did get the opportunity to say it, and hopefully the ears were open.
It is a tough time, and we're waiting for that official government announcement to say that we are moving into level 3 of restrictions. And that does raise a lot of questions about sport. And Rob, you touched on how important it is. You know, we're still going to be able to train at the weekends, but like, there's a lot of kids out there who are not going to be able to play their matches. You mentioned your daughter there, and like, that's a big blow for them.
It is. You know, they really do enjoy it. They wouldn't do it otherwise. It's great to be able to actually have groups of people that you can go and you can hang out with and you can chat with and you can play alongside and grow up alongside. So hopefully, you know, the kids that are playing now will still be going on. It was Sailor semi-finals weekend in Dublin this weekend as well. So, you know, if level 3 comes in, which looks inevitable now, then all of the juvenile games in the GAA are automatically called off. The adult matches can still go ahead. So, you know, we just have to hold our breath. Like, it's 3 weeks. So, you know, hopefully we'll be out of this at the beginning of October. And in a year like this, where so many things that would have seemed impossible at the beginning of the year have actually materialised, you know, we could be in the thick of GAA inter-county championships at that time. We could still have those juvenile championships that are played out to their conclusion. You know, and hopefully that will be the case. The guidelines are that training will be able to continue. It'll be non-contact, so hopefully they'll be able to practice their kicking of points and scores, and still manage to get together and have a laugh, even if it is socially distanced, which probably will need to be the case.
I think so too. Well, Rob, since you started that answer, the Taoiseach Micheál Martin has started his speech, and he has confirmed Dublin's move to level 3. Rob Hartnett, Sport for Business, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to talk about rugby, and we're going to enjoy it, Dunica, because yeah, it's good to have sport.
With Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way. Game on.
Game on 2FM.
Okay, Marie, you mentioned it there. The third weekend of September is normally the end of your pre-season, but in this year, like no other, it's the biggest weekend of European Cup rugby with four incredible matches this weekend. To preview them, we're joined by two of the hardest hitters in Irish rugby, Leinster's Lindsay Peat and Ulster's Stephen Ferris. Guys, how are you? Lindsay, I know I can't see you, but I know there's a grin ear to ear since ever since Leinster's incredible win over Ulster, but they're going to have to step it up this weekend, aren't they?
Oh, listen, you know, we're into Test rugby now, and what a bigger, you know, the last opponent to beat Leinster before their unbeaten start. It has been Saracens, so they're under no illusion. The big test that faces them tomorrow at 3 o'clock in the Aviva.
Stephen, how much of a step up is it going to be from those games against Ulster and Munster, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a bit of a leveler, obviously, as well, because of no fans, the atmosphere, the kind of home draw of Leinster being at home. It sort of it balances everything out even more. And I think this match against Saracens, we're really going to see how good this Leinster team really are. You know, they're hoping to have the label of the Invincibles come the end of this tournament, and you know, I wouldn't be a guy who'd be betting against them. They looked incredible against Ulster. They started with Ross Byrne and left their club captain Johnny Sexton on the bench. They made numerous changes and they've shuffled things up again for this match. So yeah, I'm really, really excited to see how they go.
Lindsay, I think we'd all agree that Leinster can step up, but can Saracens, just in a year that they've been, you know, deducted the points from so early on, they've been playing for nothing, there's been a lot of changes, Owen Farrell obviously suspended, can you see a lift in them?
Oh, absolutely. Sure, they were on the cusp of, you know, not going ahead with, you know, any further European games, you know, when they went to Racing and they won 27-24, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, Leinster need to basically treat Saracens like they're a full squad, that they've had no drama in the last couple of months, because though Owen Farrell is obviously missing and a big player like Alex Good is still, you know, quite competent to come in. He would have been filled the shoes last year at this stage when they played Glasgow. So, you know, they can't be under any illusions or think because his big name's not missing. I do agree with Stephen, the crowd not being there and home advantage is a little bit levelled, but I think, like you said, you know, really Leinster being going through the gears, and I think they're just, you know, ready to peak tomorrow, but they can't go in, you know, having a mist over them that they're, you know, they're going up against the Saracens team that aren't ready to dethrone them.
Stephen, I know you've seen a lot of Leinster and Saracens over the last while, and if you just look back at that game, that defeat, how has Leinster's game evolved since then?
Yeah, well, I think it's been slow progress in terms of, you know, it's a well over a year. What was it, the 11th or 19th of May, the last time they were beaten? And I said a few times this week in different articles that I've been doing, there feels like there's an element of revenge that's going to happen in this match. Leinster were certainly hurt after that defeat. You know, there was people saying, you know, Gary Ringrose, if he had thrown that pass, you know, it could have been a different story. Leinster did not deserve to win that game last year, and that's the reality of it. And I think Leo Cullen has reminded them of that from the get-go of this season, and they've just been building slowly and gradually, and, you know, 53 players used in the Pro 14, and they're all just coming together and putting in massive effort week in, week out. The competition for places is bringing the best out in everybody, and they keep adding to their coaching staff. And when you do all that and you put all those things together, you have a championship winning side, and they've got one of those in the Pro 14, and I certainly think that they're going to get the next one in the European Cup. So they might have changed tactically over the last few weeks when they've gotten to knockout rugby, and specifically that match against Munster. I've talked about it a few times, the demoralisation kind of aspect that they go into and kick the ball back to you and ask you to ask questions of them because their defence is so good. But they showed in the final when they're given an opportunity or when they smell blood, they go after you. And yeah, they're just a team that doesn't make too many mistakes. Leo Cullen is very confident in any single player that is wearing a blue jersey. And, you know, this unbeaten run for me isn't going to come to an end tomorrow.
Lindsay, Stephen outlined there why they are a championship winning side, but are they an unbeatable team?
No, I think at this stage in such a top competition, no team is invincible. But again, I'd agree with Stephen. Like, when you're a team like Leinster, who have such high standards, who believe in every player, the 53, that, you know, a process, and the Leinster process is ingrained in their DNA, then it just instills confidence and an invincibility, and they drive those standards. So I think I agree that it's going to be revenge tomorrow. Like, Saracens bullied Leinster in that last loss. They did. You know, it wasn't the Leinster team that, and they didn't deserve to win. But I think they've been building. I think Stuart Lancaster will know a lot of the players, you know, some of them playing under his England tenure. I think himself and Leo will have, you know, dissected Saracens, and they'll adapt to beating the beast that lies away for them, in wait for them tomorrow. So no team is invincible, but I don't think Leinster will go in complacent. There is a ruthlessness, and they don't like to lose. And that's just their personality now. And I think I do think a Leinster win will be on the cards tomorrow.
Stephen, Lindsay's hit the key point there, isn't it? Like, we will, when you play English opposition, you know what's coming. It's going to be a set piece battle. The kicking game is huge, but they're going out to bully Leinster, and they will have felt they did that in last year's final.
Yeah, and Donegh, I was on the show with Marie and you a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about how poor Munster were, and, you know, they got beaten 10-3, and you know, they had a couple of kicks with JJ Hanrahan. Maybe that's the way to go to beat this Leinster team. Like, if JJ had a knock goes over, it would have been 10-9 with a few minutes left on the clock, and you never know, the bounce of a ball or a decision could have went their way and they could have won the match. And I'm certainly expecting Saracens to kick the ball probably twice as much as Ulster did in the final there last week. Speaking to Johnny Bell, the former Gloucester defence coach, after last weekend's match, he was hanging about, and he was saying to me, like, Saracens, he would expect them to do exactly that, but just kick the leather off it, try and force Leinster into making mistakes, and then they're pretty good at doing what Leinster are doing, capitalising on that as well. So, yeah, you can bring all the physicality that you want, and we all know, Donoghue and I know, and Lindsay know that you know, the English team certainly bring that in abundance, but I certainly think that Leinster can meet fire with fire, and that's why I'm so excited about tomorrow and what it's going to bring.
Lindsay, when you look at that back row, that is a back row to compete, but the big area that everyone's probably interested in is Sean Cronin coming in at hooker. Obviously Ronan Keller dropping to the bench. It was a disappointing day for the lineouts, and I know as a second row forward, the first thing you always do when it comes to lineouts going badly is blame the hooker. It's unfortunate for Ronan Keller in this sense, but a great opportunity for Sean.
No, and I think, yeah, like you said, we need consistency, and unfortunately Ronan has been another unearthing of a great promising hooker, but set piece is going to be key, possession of the ball is going to be key, and I think we can see that, unfortunately, you know, he's not going to take a chance tomorrow, and rightly so. I'm also the lifter for our line-out targets, and you just don't want to be gathering messy ball or not winning ball or being on the back foot from the go. So I think, though it's unfortunate for Ronan, I think it's, you know, he's deserving of being up there, but we need consistency, and we need our throws to be consistent, and we need to be winning primary ball at set piece, and that, you know, no bigger area than the line out. So it's unfortunate, but I think Sean will come in, and he's lively then around. You just never know what he's going to do. He could make a line break 1 minute or going over off the back of a mall the next. So, you know, it's like Stephen said, 53 players that can come in and do a job, sure. Mr. Van der Fleer got man the match last week, and he's sitting on the bench. You know, that's just how confident they are in every squad member.
I actually saw somebody describe him in a player rating as somebody who was playing knowing that his position might not be safe next week, and there you go. But Donegh, we spoke about the line-out and what they were going to do this week. When you saw that selection call, what did you think with Cronin and Keller?
I think when we saw Jordan Larmour probably being backed after a poor performance against Munster in the original game, I kind of like maybe players being rewarded. Of course, Sean Cronin is an incredible player, and as Lindsay said, it's brilliant to have that competition for places. But maybe, Stephen, maybe you have an opinion on it. Sometimes I think when you have a poor performance and a coach backs you, you know you need to put in a performance. And look, they have, no one they're going to put out is going to put in a bad performance. But I do feel for Ronan Kelleher.
Yeah, I certainly feel for him. And one of the question marks around Sean Cronin not getting more international starts over the last number of years has been because his line-out throwing has always been questioned on the big occasion. And like you and I have played with Nugget, he's a fantastic all-round guy. He's a great rugby player. And, you know, he generally his line-out throwing is pretty good. And I think this is Leo Cullen actually, you know, putting a real test to Sean Cronin to say, look, you're now in your early 30s here. Let's see if you've still got it. I'm putting you in the biggest game of the season so far. You've never let me down. I'm putting faith in you once more to not let me down on the biggest stage here. So I think it's a great call. And like Leo is so ruthless, like, isn't he? He's just not scared to mix it up at certain times. And Dan McFarland's maybe taken a leaf out of his book as well over the last couple of weeks with some of the changes that he's made. But it's working really well for them. I think Ronan Keller can find himself very unlucky because, you know, Dunner's looking at those lineouts that it wasn't just down to the hooker. Everybody was just standing around looking at each other at some stages, and you know, nobody was even getting in the air. So it wasn't like it was just overthrows or underthrows or you know, the ball being thrown way too early or late. So yeah, I feel for him, but what an opportunity for Sean Cronin, and yeah, hopefully he rises up to it.
Stevie, you can blame the second rows or the hookers, but never blame the lifters. Isn't that right, Lindsay?
Never. We're always at full extension, Duncan. We're always at full extension.
So we'll move ahead to the Sunday's game because this is going to be incredible. Toulouse versus Ulster. Lindsay, how do you see this going? Like, looking at Toulouse across the board last week, they've just such talent, but what a fight up front Ulster are going to have. 1-5, that Toulouse front five is incredible.
Listen, they've really reignited, you know, themselves, being a club so steeped in European history. And look at their squad, you know, it's ridiculous. But I think Ulster have turned themselves around, and, you know, we all, I think, here, you know, just wish nothing for another Irish win come Sunday. But playing away from home, and I think, though the, you know, positive of Ulster's, it has been their inconsistency. So obviously John Cooney's back in, big loss in Marcel Coutte and at number 8. So the odds are slightly a bit more stacked against them, but you never know on the day.
And there'll be fans, Stephen, as well.
Yeah, there will be. The match has actually been changed to a different stadium, where there'll be 5,000, I think, season ticket holders for Toulouse. There's a couple of lads who have escaped bans for throwing a few digs in one of the last matches. They only got 1 week ban.
Crazy.
So they're back, of course. They're back for this quarter final. And yeah, you've ever played against playing six, and you've Tulafua, who's playing number 8, who's just a strong, explosive, powerful, the dynamism of a player. And you know, the front player that's done like a touchdown, Fangina, who is called the wardrobe for a reason. Like, he's absolutely huge. You know, they're just a side that they're not the top 14 champions for no reason. And I think that the actual betting on the match as well, when Marcel Coutier was ruled out of the match, as definitely swung more in Toulouse's favour. So yes, it's as an Ulster fan and somebody who has watched them greatly over the last 4 weeks in all the matches, I do give them a chance. They've picked a team to go out and throw it around. You know, Timoney at number 8 is a former sevens player, so even that selection on its own suggests to me that they're going to try and move this big pack around of Toulouse. And you just never know, coming into the last half an hour, if the game's a bit cagey, you might come out the right end.
Lindsay, you mentioned that no Marcel Coutsia, and he has probably been one of the informed players in the country over the while. But the big call was John Cooney coming back in at 9. And as Stephen's saying there, maybe with the game in the last 20 minutes, bringing someone like Albie Matheson off the bench to increase that tempo could be a good thing.
Yeah, we've seen it 2 weeks ago, and I think he's not afraid to increase the pace and open teams up. And like you said, if Ulster can stay toe-to-toe and move that big pack around and you know, hits off shoulders and make gain lines, you know, and stay in the game, and then Albie come on and try and finish it off. But I think hopefully John's had a, you know, just a boost of confidence coming back in there, and he can prove his selection in a big game where, you know, as I said last week, he's been Ulster's player to player the last two seasons, and he's well capable of doing that again on Sunday for them. And then, yes, Albie, what a replacement to come in, and said, hopefully with the game in the balance and him finishing off and getting Ulster over the line, what a great day it'll be for them, you know, after a up and down couple of seasons.
Yeah, Stephen, when you look at threats, and we all do it, when you look at people that you need to be on edge for, Chelsea Colby, the South African World Cup winning winger, there's no one a greater threat in world rugby. Like, how do you contain him for Ulster?
Yeah, he's been good, but Cooney.
You're back in
the Donners. He's back.
Are you delighted with that selection?
Yeah, I am delighted with that selection. I thought probably, you know, that final last week was really harsh on him. And somebody that's given blood, sweat and tears to the jersey for the last couple of seasons, and then for Matheson to come in and make his first start for Ulster in the final against John Cooney's former team, I thought that was a bit of a low blow maybe, but that's what coaches get paid the big money to do, to make those decisions. And to be honest, for me personally, it wasn't that big a decision, the final. It was probably more the Shepherd's Hook at half time in the semi-final that maybe gave the slightly wrong message. You know, if you take a player off, you know, yourself in 45 minutes, it's completely different to dragging somebody off at half time. But again, it worked in their favour. But I think McFarland.
But he has been out of sorts, Stephen, hasn't he? To be fair to him.
He has.
You know, he is such an exciting player.
Yeah.
And so key to Ulster. You know, it was. I found it frustrating to watch him and know what he could do. So I'm sure as an Ulsterman, and knowing him obviously on a different level, you want him to be back to John Cooney's best, and it's hard then to know how to get a player back in.
It is, and I think even, I know it's not right to say it, but the first couple of games against Connacht and Leinster, they were dead rubbers. Like, you know, there was nothing on the line, there was no fans, no atmosphere, and he just strikes me as the type of guy who, you know, loves and feeds off that atmosphere and feeds off the big occasion. And pre-lockdown, he was one of Europe's best players. You know, he was absolutely sensational. So hopefully there's something that kickstarts John Cooney back into gear again, and we see what he's made of, because we all know he's such a talented player and he's been given this chance, and I hope he grabs it with both hands.
Lindsay and Steve, we're tight in time, but just looking at the other games, Exeter taking on Northampton, and Lindsay, it was good to hear that there was a rule change to allow Northampton have a loose head prop in their squad. You know, the way the season has gone, it would have been crazy to put maybe someone, you know better than anyone, to move position or to task someone to do that.
Oh yeah, especially in a specialist position as the front row, you know, you just can't be messing with it. So I think the right decision was made there. Hopefully, as I said, I actually selfishly haven't looked past the Irish teams, but I think obviously an All English affair.
Yeah,
a hard one to call.
Yeah.
I'll go with Exeter on that one, to be honest.
Yeah, I join you. Northampton have been so poor since coming back out of it. But the Munster interested is in Racing, and Simon Zeeble starting at 15, Dunnock Ryan on the bench. It's going to be a brilliant game, Stephen. Clermont versus Racing. How do you see that one going?
Yeah, it's going to be a belter, and it's brilliant to see Simon Zeeble back. Everybody's been reading in the press, I think, over the last week or so, that Simon Zeeble might be on his way back to Munster, or might be changing clubs. His contract, I believe, is possibly up at the end of this season. Again, it's all speculation, all this reading about it, because he hasn't been playing that much, but I think he was carrying a bit of a knock. He's back, he's in the 15 jersey. I'm really excited to see how he goes. Finn Russell was superb. Back at Tawa, we all know what he's capable of. It's going to be a really exciting game. Unfortunately for Racing, they're away from home. And, you know, Claremont have such a good record at home. They're more or less unbeatable there, a bit like Leinster are at the Aviva Stadium. So, I'm going to go for Claremont just to sneak this one. Even though Racing 92 are probably playing the better rugby at the minute just because of that home ground.
Yeah, Lindsay and Steve, I won't ask you to call it, because I know you'll always call with your hearts and look for an Ulster Leinster win like we all are. Thanks so much for joining us on Game On.
Thanks a million.
Game On on QFM with Green Farm. A quick and easy addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way. Game On.
on 2FM.
Now, welcome back to Game On. It is time to turn our attention to football, and it is a seriously busy weekend for football. The women are taking on Germany tomorrow, the Ireland women's team, in their Euro 2022 qualifier. There's lots of League of Ireland games on and some serious Premier League clashes as well. To go through all of that, I'm delighted to say we are joined by Alan Cawley and Lisa Fallon. And Alan Cawley is one of the lucky people to be at a game. You're down in the showgrounds for Sligo Rovers and Bows, Al.
He's not. He's gone AWOL. Lisa, what about this fella? Huh?
He is gone AWOL, yeah. Lisa, you're going to games as well.
I am. Unfortunately, yeah, we get our league is up and running now. So we've had the first two league games so far. So such was all being well that things will keep going. And as we face the, you know, what looks like potentially a turbulent couple of months ahead. But, you know, I think a lot of work has gone on to keep football, get it back on, and you know, it's an ongoing process to keep it back on and safely as well. So yeah, thankfully so far so good.
So your team, London City Lionesses, Lisa, you are back. You're a head coach now. You're just in it, one game in. What's it been like for you?
Yeah, it's been brilliant. It's you know, the fantastic group of players to work with. So really enjoying it so far. A lot of work to do, a lot of building, a lot of processes. I'm really starting to see the work that we did in pre-season starting to come through into the team and how they're playing and taking that information on board. So, yeah, it's really good. You know, very, very competitive league this year. Every game will be a tough game. There won't be any easy games. It's one of those divisions. It's not one fixture you'd look at and go, yeah, we should be all right in that one. You know you're going to have to work really, really hard in every game. But that's it. That's exactly the way you want it to be. You know, there's so much quality in English football there in the women's game, and you can see the massive influx of players that have come in from all over Europe and the top players in the States as well. So, you know, it's the standard is going up and up and up all the time, but that's exactly what you want, you know.
Lisa, are you seeing that, you know, even compared to last year in your time at Chelsea, are you already seeing with the influx of players in all the leagues that the standard is going through the roof?
It really is. Like, I mean, you can see it in training every day. I mean, I've changed a few of the players in our squad and you can see the quality. And, you know, we got a lovely County Cup group. We got drawn in against Tottenham, Chelsea and Arsenal.
Oh, nice.
So we've got big games coming up. So, you know, you see Alex Morgan has just signed for Tottenham, Chelsea. I mean, they're a team I know really, really well and the quality that they have. And then obviously Arsenal are the same. So, but, you know, these are the games that you want to for our club, a young club. But that's what you want to see. You want it to be competitive. You want to see it to be a marketable product. You want it to be tough, and that's what you want, because that's the signs the game's improving, you know.
And just from a purely Irish point of view as well, you want to see the Irish girls playing at that level, and you know, we're going to be looking forward to seeing them playing against Germany tomorrow. Let's hear from the Ireland women's manager, Vera Pau.
I try to be realistic. We are preparing to get the best out of us to give Germany the best game ever. And then we'll see if that is good enough to get a result. It would not be realistic to say like, we go on to win or we go on to draw. We will. The game itself will show how far we are. And we prepare the best way we can and with all our energy, all our power, and the place will be ready. And that is why I say, I think that you will be proud of them. Whatever the result. There is too big a game to experiment. We do that in friendlies. And unfortunately, we were just discussing with each other. The 2020 is such a strange year. I've imposed a year now. The Friday was my anniversary for 1 year in place. And we had 4 camps. And that's it. And a few home-based sessions. That's what we actually have been doing with the players. Off the pitch, we've done a lot. We've done a lot in improving and with video, watching the video of the players, giving feedback, then again, making steps in it. But this game is not a game to try out. This game is to be at our best. But being at our best, we will feel our limits, and we will carry that on in the Ukraine game. And we hope that soon we have the situation that we can have friendly games, and then we can make an experiment.
Lisa, as a coach here, is that the right type of attitude to go in for such a big game? Do you put all your resources into the performance and the preparation?
Of course we do. I mean, we're top of the group. There's great progression in the team. I know I've worked with Vera the last few months as well, and she's got two of my players in her squad as well. And I know the amount of work that she's done, and even just from a logistical point of view, trying to get the players from 9 different countries into Germany for the game. But, you know, she's dead right. The Irish team will be really up against it. This will be the biggest test for them, and really it's a game to go and test yourself and put yourself out there at your best and see how far have we come, how far off are we. But not to fear the game, but to embrace it and bring it on as a challenge, to be welcomed and to go up and with courage and confidence and test yourself against those players and see what we're about. But then obviously she's bang on. The big game for us is the game against Ukraine next month. That's the one. If we win that game, we're guaranteed second place in it. And, you know, as we know, there's 9 groups. The 9 first team places go through. The 3 best second places go straight through. And then there's 6 teams that go into the playoffs. And the main objective for Ireland is to make sure that we secure, if not a second, an automatic second place, then that we make sure that we get a playoff place. So the Germany game certainly won't define us in this group. It'll be all about the Ukraine one. But this is certainly an opportunity for us to go and test ourselves against the best in the world. And they are the best in the world right now. And that's a real opportunity for the players to go and embrace it, and for Vera as well. And I've no doubt she'll have them really, really well prepared. I know they've done massive work this week in training. And, you know, it's a great opportunity for the Irish team and the Republic of Ireland women to go and test themselves against the best.
And Lisa, how do you think she's going to approach it? She said, you know, they're going to try and play as open as possible. But, you know, as you said there, like, they're playing the best team in the world, and a best team in the world who were in absolutely fantastic form as well. 31 goals, none conceded. And even if you look at where they were when they crashed out of the World Cup, how much they've even improved since then.
Yeah, absolutely. During the World Cup, they were a team in transition. But then they've gone, in this group, they've beaten Montenegro 10-0. They beat Greece 6-0. They beat Ukraine 8-0. So they're big scoring games. So for Ireland to keep this game as a low scoring game would be first and foremost in her mind. But again, you have to have that courage and that conviction to go and play, and to have that belief in what you're about. This will take a Trojan, a mammoth defensive effort from Ireland. This game will, to keep a clean sheet, but there will be opportunities for us to go and counter-attack, and we've got brilliant counter-attacking players like Casey McCabe, Denise O'Sullivan, Rhianna Jarrett is in flying form, and we played against Brighton in a pre-season friendly a couple of weeks ago, and she was on fire. She was brilliant for them. Megan Connolly is back in the squad as well, and she was missing for the last 2 games. So Vera has a really, really good squad. Her best players are available to her, which is a real, real bonus. And it's a great opportunity for us to go. And listen, you know, we're a good counter-attacking team, but we're also a really good team from set pieces. And you know, I wouldn't put it past us to nick one in the game if we can get ourselves up the pitch and get an opportunity, even if it's not a cross into the box that goes into the box, but that you win a corner from it. You know, Diane Caldwell and Louise Quinn, two incredible players and great goal-getters for us from set pieces. And we've players that can put in great deliveries as well. So, absolutely, it would be a Trojan defensive effort from the team, but certainly not one. You know, certainly there would be opportunities for us to go and play a bit and counter-attack, and I'm sure that the players will be given the licence to go and do that.
Alan Cawley sends his apologies from the showgrounds. There are some technical issues. Look, we're talking about how managers are going to approach games, and it is a massive weekend for the Premier League as well, Lisa. And I think kind of Liverpool and Chelsea coming up against each other is going to be one that is going to attract a lot of attention. And OK, obviously the players are big names, but even just seeing Frank Lampard and Jurgen Klopp and how Frank Lampard is going to almost bounce back from that July game against Liverpool.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at the quality in both teams, and I think Thiago has signed for Liverpool today. And you look at the signings that Chelsea has made during the summer, like Timo Werner is a player I think is incredible. He's going to be, and even last week we got to see real glimpses of the explosivity that he brings to games, and how he can just advance the play so quickly, and he changes the point of attack. And, you know, for once I think Chelsea can't play the underdog card this year. That, you know, a top 4 finish won't be enough. They're a team that after the investment this season, there will be pressure to deliver and be Premier League contenders this year, and that's what it's about, and that's why you know, it's a great game for
for us supporters who'll be watching from home, it's one of those games that you just think it's going to be really interesting, but there will be a bit more pressure, I think, on Chelsea this year to deliver in those games because of the investments and the quality of players that Frank has brought in this summer.
And there's going to be some other really big games. We're going to see Manchester United, see how they are after the strange pre-season that they've had, and Manchester City are in action as well, so it'll be nice to see the two Manchester teams back in action. Okay, Lisa Fallon, I have to say the game I'm looking forward to most is the women's game against Germany, but look, thanks so much for joining us, and look, best of luck with the upcoming games that you have as well. We'll talk to you soon.
Brilliant. Thanks a million. Take it easy.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Okay, to golf now in the US Open, and we're delighted to be joined by Greg Allen. Greg, how are you?
Good, Danica. It's a very interesting second day. Conditions a bit more difficult. It's amazing. The wind has just changed direction from where it was yesterday, or the southwest to the north. And now also the pins are just no longer at the bottom of little slopes, so they're not gathering, the balls aren't gathering towards the hole as they were yesterday. And it's totally different. The scoring average has gone up to around 74.5 already. We've seen Rory McIlroy, though, start with a birdie on the third toughest hole in the course. So McIlroy up to 4 under par, tied for third place with Harris English, just one stroke off the leaders, Justin Thomas, who's played two holes, and Patrick Reed, who's birdied the second, so he's moved to 5 under as well. So Reed and Thomas lead on 5 under par. English and McIlroy tied for second on 4 under, so good scoring at the top of the leaderboard. Bryson DeChambeau was set the target on 3 under par after a round of 68. Good news for Shane Lowry, looks like he's going to make the cut because he birdied 2 of the last 3 holes to get in on 6 over par, a round of 76 yesterday, a 70 today. That round of 70, incidentally, is the third best round out of 70 completed rounds, so Lowry shooting well, but probably will now make the cut on 6 over par. But McIlroy's the man again.